This is Akafe. Laura Marie and Jessica Marie proudly present A Court of Fandoms and Exploration, a podcast. Fair warning, everything the hosts say is explicit, full of spoilers and adult content, and shall not be used against them. They have opinions. Let's try not to drag anyone for expressing themselves and just have fun for an hour. We all deserve it.
This episode does not contain spoilers, but does mention Dexter, Hosab, the OC, and Death Becomes Her. There are also discussions surrounding EDs and sexual assault. For full list, please see show notes. Everybody, and welcome to A Court of Fandoms and Exploration, your weekly deep dive into the YA literature and fandoms that we love. I'm Laura Marie.
And I'm Jessica Marie.
And today we are discussing the 2009 cult classic, Jennifer's Body. This was initially a flop, but we are here to revisit it. I have confirmed with Jessica that this is her first viewing of Jennifer's Body, and I think you would be interested to know, Jess, that everyone that I have spoken to is shocked, shocked that you specifically have been pushing for us to cover this movie for a while because you are a well-known scaredy cat and this is a horror movie. Is that correct?
Well, yes, but I didn't think it was a horror movie. Like, I watched it. I didn't think it was a horror movie. I didn't feel like it was a horror movie. I had seen very brief, maybe 7 second, like clips on social. And it's really just the part where, Megan Fox, when her and Amanda are going like, "You're killing people." And she goes, "No." And Megan goes like, "No, I'm killing boys. Boys are just placeholders that come and they go." And meanwhile, where I watched it, it was on HBO Max, or Max, whatever people are calling it now. I don't know. They probably will rebrand after this episode airs again. But it's not even in there. It was in the trailer.
It's only in the trailer. It's a deleted scene. It's not in any version of the film. It's not there.
Waste.
You bring up a very interesting point by saying that that's not in the trailer, especially because there's all those lawsuits about like misleading like movie trailers and stuff now. This is a very interesting one.
That's happened with Bring It On as well.
Yes. No, absolutely. In the trailer, that line was there. There are two different releases of this film. There's the theatrical cut and there is the director's cut. The theatrical cut, which is what I have seen the most of, and Jess, that's what you saw. That's on HBO. The director's cut is behind a paywall, I think, on Amazon as of May 6, 2023. So I have not seen that. I didn't see that at all, but there is a website that you can go to. I'll put it in the notes, that has all of the comparisons between the director's cut and the theatrical release. Now, all of this to say, Jess, clearly, obviously, you did not see this when it came out in 2009. I did not either. So I didn't see any of these releases until later because of the marketing. The marketing really did a number on me and the environment and where I was in 2009. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, after doing research, two huge reasons that I did not see this. One, everybody knows, if you haven't, like, welcome to the show. I don't do horror. And then in 2009, I was working like I had like a full-time job and a part-time job. Like my days off at my full-time job, I was working somewhere else. So I just didn't have time. It was working or sleep. So like with anything, you know, you hear about it, you talk about it. And then it probably really was in the last year that I just heard more of the conversation about feminism, feminine rage, and like this movie is a perfect example. And we're both just such huge fans of Megan Fox and, you know, the conversation that she has surrounding feminism. I didn't even know Amanda like, I know she's been in a lot of stuff, but I don't really know her roles outside of Mean Girls and like Mamma Mia. So to see her rage and be frustrated and angry in this correction facility right at the beginning of the movie, I was like, oh, okay, I get the range. I get it now.
You get it. You get it now. I think we all get it now because famously, no one got it then. Famously, huge flop. Huge flop.
16 million domestic box office. Like, flop, flop. Probably cost more to make it.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was coming, like, off of Juno, right? This has a great director, great writer, like, everything. We have women all over this. Just crashed and burned. Great stuff. Have a lot of fun facts for us at the end of the episode. I do, though, want to start out just right off the bat. Jess, do you like this movie before we get into it?
Yeah, I...
You have me so shy now with things. I don't know.
I was going to say, it was one of, I was like, we're back on track. I love this. Like, we're back on our ship because I really love the movie and I watched it for the first time. I started it last night. I finished it this morning and then, I ran some errands and then I did another full rewatch of this and it was so, I can't say if I noticed anything different, but I was able to just like enjoy it more because there were certain parts where, like, as somebody who is understands how horror can be, you know, I would expect if she closed the refrigerator and Jennifer would be there, but she wasn't. Like, it's that jump scare anticipation, and then she would finally show up, and I was like, oh, okay. Like, there were certain things that you understand come with horror, but I just didn't feel like this was a horror movie, but I can see how it can be classified as that. At least horror from, like, the stuff that I don't watch.
Second question for you. Obviously, I love this movie. I love this movie. Have you ever seen anything like this before? This female, so like, I mean, we'll get into it, but like toxic kind of female friendship, female rage, female revenge, female driven horror, boys are victims movie.
Not off the top of my head, but it was one of the things that I noted in like my notes watching this both times were like the things that I didn't like. I didn't like the way, you know, true to us. I didn't like the women being pitted against each other. I thought, you know, and there were a lot of things that came with this movie. I think we should say up front, you know, like using, you know, the R word and variations of it and using gay slurs and like the microaggressions regarding Needy's manicure. And of course, like, and this is just like the smallest trope that like it's so it's nothing compared to the actual problematic issues in this movie, because it's a 2000s movie of just like, oh, Amanda's like, she has glasses, which the glasses don't have lenses, by the way. And, you know, and then she takes her glasses off and the boyfriend's like, you're really gorgeous. And like, that's when she's having her pretty girl moment is she's kicking ass and taking names and fighting Jennifer. And she didn't need her glasses to do it. Like, if you want me to get a solid hit in, I'm going to need my glasses. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. 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 Facts. These are all very, very solid facts. I have no problems with this movie. Obviously, the microaggressions, whatever. But like that is explained in the movie in like a little fun joke, which is fun. I love it. I love it. It is a time. It's a place. It's a thing. It is Seth Cohen's like gap year, right?
But you know what's funny? Yeah, absolutely. Because then when like you have the flashback scene of Jennifer talking about like what happened in the woods and the things that he's saying to her and all his mannerisms and like, you guys, like it's really hard being like an indie rock band right now. Like we're all so cute. I was like, Seth Cohen, this is not Adam Brody in a different role. This is Seth Cohen. Him and Summer aren't together. Him and Anna aren't together. He's not with anyone.
He went to a dark place.
Yeah, because Ryan isn't here to guide him. Like, he's going through some shit.
Sandy's looking for him, but he's in Minnesota. You know, it's all over. It's all over.
It's 100% Seth, though. Like, he even did the delayed eyeliner years. Like, okay, Seth, calm down. You're from the OC.
It was amazing. It was amazing. We'll talk about the jump scare that we have in that bar scene as well, which we all get a good laugh about. Okay. Let's just jump right into this, because I think everything we need to say will come out naturally as we go through this movie. All right. Cold open. I hate this cold open every time I look at it, because I cannot stand people that like scab pick. And that's just, it's like the first fucking thing that you see. But we have the cold open. You know, we have a horse. Very scary. I'm scared of horses. I could not remember the name of this guy on this infomercial, but I've seen that infomercial a thousand times. Editor Sam was saying it was like Tom or something. I was saying it was like Tim. I don't know.
I thought it was like Tim Robbins, but that can't be in like.
That can't be. I don't know. I don't know who it is. We could Google it, but let's not. That is excellent infomercial. Takes me right back. So Jennifer's in bed. She looks bad. And we have Amanda. We have Needy. Her name is Anita, but we call her Needy. In a hoodie outside of the house. This is a very nice cold open.
But also full circle towards the end.
Yes. Also full circle towards the end. We'll get there. Hell is a teenage girl. This line is amazing.
It brought me back to the Virgin Suicides, where there was like, well, doctor, you've never been a teenage girl.
Exactly. And it is nice that we have done things in that order so that we can like make that nice comparison, because the comparison that is made, I'll just tell you now, in the fun facts, is to a play that is very serious. That says like Hell is Other People. This is just better. This is more in our vibe. So yes, Hell is a teenage girl. And then we have our opening with Needy in prison. She says Chesters. I immediately thought of cricket. Did you?
Chesters?
Yes.
No.
No?
No, I didn't think of cricket at all.
Yeah, she goes, oh, you know, I get letters. They're mostly from Chesters and pedophiles. In cricket, the people that are assholes, bastards, all those, they call them Chesters.
Oh, I didn't even think of cricket there. I was thinking where she was like, I'm kind of the shit and like people kind of worship me, but they also like, she was kind of in her own head. So it was interesting to see where the career goes, but I didn't think of the Chesters. I didn't make the correlation between the two.
So just tell us, Miss Amanda and the rest of the cast.
I feel like the key players, really like the big names, or big now, even big then. Megan Fox plays Jennifer. Amanda Seyfried plays Anita or Needy. You have the lead singer of Low Shoulder, which is like this emo pop punk band who, based on an interview with the director writer, she said was inspired by Snow Patrol and Fall Out Boy. We'll have all like a bunch of links in our show notes also. And the jump scare that is Chris Pratt was not expecting. I heard his voice and I looked up real quick, because his voice does come on before he makes an appearance, and because it was just like, I know that voice, and there he is in all his Chris Prattness. And then you have Amy Sedaris, who plays Amanda's mom, and those are really like, I want to like, we have key
JK,
characters.
JK.
Oh, J.K. Simmons, he plays a teacher.
Justice for J.K. Detroit, he's my boy, love him.
What did you see him on a flight one time?
JK? No.
Why
no.
I think you did.
But I would love to see JK on a flight. Oh my goodness. What would I say to that man? Nothing. Thank you for everything. My gosh. Yeah, those are pretty much like the mains, I would say. And then there's just like the boys, but yeah, they are purposely just like boys.
They're placeholders.
Yeah. So it's fine. Yeah. Okay.
So they're in Devil's Kettle. They're in Middle America. And not a lot going on in this town. There's a local high school. And Needy and Jennifer have been best friends forever, since they were young, playing in the sandbox. Needy even says, like, sandbox love always, like, is always going to be there. And everybody kind of like mocks their relationship. They're like, are y'all sure you're just best friends, kind of thing. But like, it's Spirit Week. There's some sort of thing going on in the high school. And ultimately, I mean, this is all within the first 10 minutes. Jennifer goes, oh, there's this indie rock band in town and they're from the city. And there's this huge, big city appeal in our small little town. Let's go to the local bar. Let's go to, she says, the club. And Needy's just like, it's not a club. It's a bar. Needy's dating this other guy, or this guy. And he's like, you're showing too much skin. But ultimately, everybody goes to this bar. Nobody gets carded, or you do get carded, but if you're underage, you just get
you're
an X on.
You're going so fast. You're
sorry,
going
I'm
so
trying
fast.
To get to like the whole stuff of it. Okay, you
no.
pace me. I'm sorry.
No. She's not a cheerleader. I want to say this.
Oh, okay.
She's not a cheerleader. She's in the color guard.
Yeah.
This is such an important fact that nobody gives a single shit about.
But I didn't say she was a cheerleader.
But all the articles that I have read have said that she's like, she's the popular cheerleader and Needy is like the nerdy best friend. No, she's not.
She's not. She's in winter guard. Yeah.
Yeah, she's in the guard. Just no, she's a flag girl. And that is wonderful and excellent. But my God, all of that to say, though, that when you are writing a review of movie, make sure that when you go, huh, she's holding a flag. I don't think she's a cheerleader. I don't know. Just pay a little bit more attention to teenage movies about teenage girls is what I'm saying.
You're asking people to do their research?
Yeah. Just do your research a little bit, please. You know, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. You also flew past the ham store. I love that line. Your mom's going out with the guy from the ham store. I love it. It's so flat and so perfect and just like random and funny and weird. There's also a MySpace reference. We can't blow past the MySpace reference.
Yeah, okay. I am flying past it because there was totally a MySpace reference.
Totally a MySpace reference. And also the iconic, it smells like Thai food. Have you guys been fucking iconic? Iconic line. And also the introduction that we have to the toxic friendship and also the like difficult and confusion and the hostility. And you could also say like the underlying queerness between these two characters, yeah. Because that's what a lot of these articles are saying. And that aggression kind of comes out because you're confused and you don't really know what's going on. This is the articles that we are linking. This is not us saying that because we cannot speak on this. However, the hard push
yeah.
that Megan Fox, that Jennifer gives Needy when they're like, no, we're not. No, we're not. Like, no, we're not. Bang.
And it was full stop.
Yeah. And Needy's like, okay. Okay. And then Chip, the boyfriend, is like, stop stealing my girlfriend. And Jennifer's like, you're just jealous. You can't come. You're lime jello. And, oh, the line, who's Phil Collins? Love the who's Phil Collins line, and I can see your womb. And also, we have the introduction, the supernatural introduction, that Needy can feel Jennifer. We have this in the bedroom, and because that's tied to the blood thing later. But I remember the first time I read this, I was just like, oh, they just like sense each other, whatever.
Right.
But like they're just like best friends. They're just like in tune. But no, like obviously we see like later on it's like way deeper than that after she's like changed. But it is still here now, which I will get into later. I have a theory about that.
Ooh, I can't wait to hear.
Yeah, but then again, they say they have nothing in common. Chip does, but I have a confession, and that confession is I want their necklaces.
The BFF necklaces?
Yes, I want it. I want it in gold. Love.
I have a question about those necklaces. Don't let me forget, but it ties more into the end and you probably know where I'm going to go with it. So I don't want to bring it up yet, but I just want to make that comment now. So I remember to circle back to it.
Perfect. Perfect. Yes. 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 And the Vagisil Monistat. Ooh. When I heard that, I was just like, oh, God. But that goes into the little joke that is thrown about a little bit later about all the language, I think, about this. But then we are up to the exes and Melody Lane. Just take us through this bar that isn't a bar, this club that isn't a club, this, what is it, bingo room with taps?
Yeah, that's what they're calling it. I think it was just like the local community center that was the just the community space that everybody, you know, if you want to drink, you can go here. If you're a teenager, you can go here. Like, people just kind of hung out as a space for something to do. This town is small. And this is where we get our Chris Pratt appearance. He is a local law enforcement officer, I guess,
cadet.
Yeah, I don't even think he's very much in like cop school or whatever, who thinks he's just important. And you have like the first interaction, he's like trying to come on to Jennifer, even though they already know each other. She essays him, but she like grabs him in public and he's like, not here. Like, he's ashamed of her. Plus, she's assuming they're in high school, she's a minor, and he's already, you know, that's the type of
he's over 21.
We assume he's over 21 and she's a minor because she's in high school.
We have Megan going in there. I say Megan. We have Jennifer and Needy get in there. We have our only introduction of Craig, swing and a miss. Craig tries to hit on Jennifer. We have the nice R word. First nice introduction to that. Also very, I'll say it now, crass, very crass language, talking about sea cucumbers, comparing them to penises. Very mm-hmm. bad, very not fun stuff. But this is the only place where we have a line that is anything close to the line in the trailer that Jesse brought up earlier. They have, these are just boys. They're just morsels.
Once you figure that out, we hold all the power.
Yeah. And she grabs Needy's boobs and she's like, these are like, what are they? Smart bombs. You point them in the right direction. Yeah. And like, shit happens. So it's just like, you know, we have to go see Low Shoulder. I think they need two more groupies. I remember this so clearly. I was so convinced that they were just going to her. I was so convinced they were going to take her out to the woods and just R-word her. Completely. Just grape her. But that is how you could say this is like a twisted kind of like grape revenge fantasy. I say twisted because it doesn't happen. You know, that is kind of a narrative in a lot of these essays that we're reading. But all that to say that the song's a banger.
I made that in my head. No, I was like, I hate that I like this song so much. Through the trees, I found myself. Like,
through
how is it?
The trees.
Oh, I mean, it should be on a pop punk playlist, honestly.
Oh, yeah. I really would love someone to cover this. I think that'd be a really great deep cut that no one yes. would get. Except
I,
if you.
One of the first things I looked up was, did Adam Brody really sing this song? And he did not. They gave him like two lessons and they had somebody else record this song.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, no one expects, I will always call him Seth. No one expects Seth to sing, but I was not expecting the virgin conversations. I was expecting that to go just a completely different way. And then, you know, it doesn't. But, you know, I like that Needy steps in and she's like, hey, no, you know what? Fuck you guys. But then she's also like, you know what? She is a virgin. And then Jennifer's like, I'm not even like a backdoor virgin, thanks to Roman.
Well, she was like offended that was the impression that she gave off because then it goes back to Nikolai, Seth Brody. I totally messed those names.
Whoa.
Seth Cohen or Adam Brody. But Nikolai, okay, he plays the character Nikolai. Nikolai's all like, I know girls like that. They're just, you know, they're very flirtatious. They're basically like, quote unquote, dick cheeses. They won't put out. And like, good for Needy sticking up for her best friend. But of course, we learn that Jennifer is the type of person who wants that type of attention.
It's just really good. Honestly, I have not seen a lot of Megan Fox's roles. I do believe, based on my limited exposure, that this is one of her best acting roles. I love this. I love her in this. It's amazing.
And she is on record saying multiple times that this is her favorite role she's ever done. The director has said, and she has openly said, like, if there was a sequel, they would do it either as like a television show or a sequel movie, like a follow up. You know that Megan could step back into this role again. She hasn't even aged. She truly is possessed. And I'm like, share your secret, Megan.
They hold hands during this song. Jennifer and Needy, they have a moment here. They're holding hands. But then Jennifer goes into like this like trance kind of.
She's like a catatonic just, like, state before anything has happened, right?
Before anything has happened. But the fire starts. So like nothing has like happened yet plot wise, but like the fire starts and she's catatonic. What the fuck? How is that not related?
Right. Because then I really paid attention to that part in my second watch. And it looks, and it's like, this is an electrical fire. But the first watch, I'm like, she started, because I feel like it's that emotional connection to something. Because she went catatonic after Needy said, the band's talking shit about you. I stood up for you, but like, you don't want to be with these type of guys. Like, this isn't what you want. And, you know, and she's just, and Jennifer's just kind of like disregarding it. But I feel like that I think is a perfect example of, you know, you have a harder exterior and then you start internalizing. That's my assumption. That's what I took away from that moment, because like you said, the coincidence of the fire happening to the band's equipment after she was told that these are their thoughts about her, like they just kind of all are too synchronized.
Yeah, it does play to something else going on here. And I do, that's just like my own personal headcanon, but it is just like fuck all weird. So yes, a fire starts, everybody graphically burns to death or is like stampeded, but Needy grabs Jennifer and pulls her out the bathroom window. Jennifer is still in this trance. She's still in, like, I guess you would call it shock. I don't know. And then Seth Cohen is just like, oh my God, I've been looking for you. Oh my God. Oh my God. You're in shock. Perfect. Love that for all of us.
That's another thing though. When did he get out? Because he was playing and then he was chilling outside with a drink. What?
I do believe that the cuts in this movie are not fantastic and that there is a little bit of like, really, really, but also whatever, we roll with it. So they got out, let's just assume through a black door. It's fine. They had a stage door. It's all fine. But he's like, I'm in shock. I need to go to the comfort of my van. Let's go to my van. And then Jennifer's like, yeah, I want to go to your really cool van. And Needy's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, but she is in a state of shock or a state of something, because you know Needy is like, what? No, because it wasn't like she was excited about going to the van. She was just in this, again, like a trance state, being like, yeah, the van sounds nice. And in my no, the van does not sound nice. And even Needy calls her boyfriend and he was like, did you get the tag? Did you get the plate number? She was like, it was like a white 89 fuck you kidnapping van. Like, no, like,
it's like, I don't know. But also, this goes back to like the toxic friendship kind of situation, because she goes, Needy, stop it. Just shut up.
Yeah.
Like, stop. And then she just leaves her and she's like, she wants to go. I say this like she wants to go. We don't really know her mindset, but like it is a toxic thing that she can like say that. And Needy does leave her.
Yeah.
Like, she leaves her there. Then Needy has the thing, like, but he was evil. He was skinny and twisted and evil. And then she still, like, lets her go, knowing that she's not in a state to consent to anything that's going to happen. I don't know. Seems like shitty friend. Shitty friend. Both people can be toxic.
Both people can be toxic. I think it's easy to be, it's easy to depict both girls as the dark haired, you know, because Megan Fox is a brunette. Here's this extroverted, confident brunette is the toxic one. And then you have this innocent,
blonde hair, blue-eyed. She's perfect. She's introverted. She didn't do anything wrong. Because you bring up a good point. Even though if your like friend is like under any type of influence, typically in a friendship, even though Megan was like, I say, we're going to be using the names interchangeably, shaking Amanda off, like, leave me alone. Like, it, like, let me just do whatever the fuck I want. When you aren't like in the right state of mind, like, if your friend is sober, your friend is coherent, a good one's going to be like, you can bitch at me and complain to me and beat my ass later. We're getting out of here.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, it is possible for both people to be toxic, for both people to not be great people. And that's fine. That's fine. And it makes the conversation more fun. So that is what we're here for. I do like the skinny twisted evil line, like the tree I saw. Very fun. Very fun. Melody Lane burns down. It's done. It's done. I have a problem with how Needy treats her house in that she doesn't turn on every fucking light in every room in that house when she knows that she's home alone. Oh my God. She's just wandering around her dark house after she had a scare, right? She's on the phone with her boyfriend. She's like, oh my gosh, the door. Oh my gosh, all of this. I'm going to keep the kitchen dark. Everything's fucking dark. Turn the lights on, Needy. But it's a horror movie. I get it. It's ambiance. It's atmosphere. I get it. It's all very suspenseful. This is the moment then, Jess, where you were like, I closed the refrigerator door. I thought she was going to be there. She wasn't there. And then she shows up. Were you expecting her to show up? I say her, Jennifer. Were you expecting Jennifer to show up at Needy's house covered in gore?
I don't think so. I think I was expecting her to show up. I wasn't sure what I was expecting because I didn't know if she was already possessed yet. Like, this is just because this is about 15 minutes into the movie. And I just was like, maybe she's a demon or possessed by a demon and nobody knows. This has just been such a really good act. So like, it was that moment that I realized, okay, here's some more background of what happened.
Yes. The smile that Megan Fox gives, the slow smile here with the red teeth. Oh, yeah. My God. Oh, my God. Put it on a poster. Let me hang it up. It's art. It is the best work she's ever done. I was in shock and awe of this moment. I was like, it is the same feeling I had watching Heath Ledger as the Joker for the first time. I was like, that can't possibly be him. That's not him. No way. It was amazing.
She's just, I think I saw some reviews or even articles that they were like, this isn't her best work. Or like they were saying, like, I think even the IMDb page was like, oh, awards and nominations. And like, she was nominated for like worst actress. There's not a role that she can do that I think she's bad. I think the writing can be bad, but I think she does an amazing job at what she's given in the scripts that she has to work with. But I'm biased because I'm just biased when it comes to her.
Well, the amazing with the script that she's given, the things that she has to do, she vomits here. She roars, right, on the ground and goes through the chicken.
That was no way that was really her.
No way. But so fun, though, right?
Yeah.
I watched this with editor Sam. He was not expecting that. He went, it's just which is the perfect snapshot of this movie, right? Because we as women are like, oh, what is going on? What is this? Like, she's oh, like, ooh, and men are like, oh, so we are leaning forward.
Yes.
Men are leaning back. All this to say that Megan Fox, wonderful here. The vomit that she did when she vomits up, you know, they say a mixture of sewing needles and roadkill. She threw up chocolate syrup. Fun fact.
Oh, she actually threw it up?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like threw up, like filled her mouth and like.
Okay.
I'm almost speechless, which is how I was the first time when I saw this sexy bite neck situation that we have where Megan Fox goes, are you scared? And she's like smelling and like biting all over needy. I remember watching that first time being like, what are we? Are we vampire? What are we? I was trying to figure it out. But the roar wasn't a vampire. So I was like, what is it? If you watch this closely from this moment, from she uses her teeth. Yeah, it's like a teeth scraping. So this moment from now for the rest of the movie, Megan Fox like actively is very like teeth forward when it's like close on her mouth. Mm-hmm. And she is not like that in the first like little bit of the movie. It is just like kind of a change of character because at this point she is possessed by a demon. It's a demon. It's probably a succubus at this point. Very fun stuff. And she just runs out. That would scare the absolute shit out of me. And they just see each other at school the next day. Oh, my God.
That would scare me more that you come to school the next day acting like, did you not? Did we just not have the same night? That would freak me out more than the thing that happened the night before. Not the attacking, not the throwing up. It's like, how are you acting like nothing has just happened?
And the severe gaslighting that happens immediately. Like, oh, you always overreact. So you remember Girl Scout camp?
Right. And the gaslighting happens throughout this movie between the toxic friendship, but also the men who, and I say men, they're boys. They're in high school. Where they're like, I think you should see somebody. Like, I think you're kind of in your head. And it's throughout the whole thing. Or you know, and she's like trusting her gut. He's like, I think you're a little fucked in the head throughout the whole. And then finally, of course, when he's dying, spoiler, he's like, I should have believed you. No fucking shit. I've been telling you that for the last hour and a half.
For real. However, I will say to that, I do feel that there are very realistic high school reactions to that because that conversation happens like pretty much like right after this. This is Needy telling Chip about what happened with Jennifer, and Chip is like, oh, she just inhaled a lot of smoke. Like, that's what that was. And we get a flashback of Needy, like, frantically, like, sobbing and, like, scrubbing her floor. She's like, no.
This isn't your friend who just threw up and you're just helping her clean up like, the mess.
Yeah. She's like, no, this wasn't like that. This was like evil. And that's when Chip is like, I'm not trying to be a dickwad, but like you are in your head a bit. You should probably like talk to somebody. And I do feel in 2009 in high school, probably what 17-year-old boy saying like, maybe talk to somebody and not being like, bitch, you are fucking insane is better.
It's better. And I think, you know, saying that out loud, I think we have to also remember that it's 2009 and the conversations were still slowly happening about publicly talking about mental health and the importance of speaking to somebody. Because, I mean, it still feels like a very recent thing. And you love seeing it depicted, but it's still a fairly new concept of just being vocal about therapy in general.
It's just another example of why this movie was ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah. Honestly. 100%.
Yeah. 1,000%.
And everybody who's worked on this film has said that, too. They say this mm-hmm. movie is more applicable now than when it came out.
Yeah. And this is when J.K. Simmons shows up. I think he's supposed to be like a war veteran. He has one arm. He has burns on his neck. And he's talking about all of the students that died in the fire. And this is when Jennifer starts to say like very mean things. She's like throwing out the dark humor. She's like talking about all of this stuff. And then she is incredibly mean to Needy. Just like, again, the toxic friendship, the like weird attraction. There is a weird attraction between the two of them. It's like, it is there.
Well, it's confirmed that it's not just, I mean, multiple times throughout the movie, but it's confirmed in the movie that it's not just one-sided from Needy's side, because even at one point when Jennifer comes back from yet another victim, she goes, come on, we can play boyfriend-girlfriend like we used to, like trying to lure Needy with like her own sexual prowess, I guess you can say.
Yeah, so it's definitely a thing. It is like an undertone. There is subtext. There is all of the things here. I love that this movie shows men, and I say men, I'm going to say specifically like Jonas, just because Jonas is the big like all-star like football player. He's, you know, he's the one that's crying. The men are overwhelmed by their grief, right? Like, he's the one that's processing. Jennifer is stalking him in that football field, like, right? Like, we see the shot of her like far away, and he's looking at her and he's like, okay. And then he looks back, and then she comes from the other direction and is like right here. And he's like, what? And she, and her seduction of him is quite something.
Well, my first question, and I remember, okay, so there's obviously always the undertone, and I think this isn't just this movie. It happens a lot with female relationships in general, you know, and everybody has a different variation of their, you know, their relationship with their best friends. And you have some best friends who both can have anxious attachment styles. So they're just both with each other at all times, all the time. So then you have like that's depicted in this, like, oh, are you sure you're just not more than best friends? I feel like there's a slight commentary for that happening here with Jonas, because he lost his best friend and being upset. Like, there is that question to be like, oh, is he just your best friend? Like, I just felt, you know, like a closeted football player kind of thing. It felt like in that moment too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, tropes on tropes, right? Turn them all on their heads. Yeah. It's so good. It's just amazing. So the seduction happens so quickly. In every single time that she seduces somebody, it happens so quickly. I do think that there is like something else working there, because she's like, "Don't you want to come with me? Don't like the
like
way
a siren's
she's
call
like,
kind of thing."
Like, yeah, yeah. She's like, "I was totally like the last person that he saw." Like, if you had any ounce of common sense, you'd be like, "What?" Because he's like, he said banging, like he's almost there. He's like, what? But then like he's lured away by boobies, like we're lured away by Jennifer's body.
Smart bombs. Oh, well, Jennifer's body. I was going to say her smart bombs, which he was. Yes. He was. But and it's that, oh, you know, like I understand that people handle their grief in different ways, but that's not what this was for her. It was
that's
clearly like
is.
A predator situation kind of thing. But like he can justify it of like, well, if like this is the last thing my friend wanted was us to like me to bang this girl, then I guess I'll do it.
Yeah. But then he's like, you're so warm. Like, why are you so warm? When she takes him out into the woods, it's like, well, okay. And then all of those animals, like, why are they all here? She's like, oh, they're waiting. Like, at any point, would you be like, fuck, I'm going to go.
All these animals should not be, like, chilling here at the same time. I would be so scared.
Yeah, they're just like, holy shit. I just cannot. So we, obviously she eats him. Like, she eats him. She's like, you know, you're going to see your friends soon in heaven. She's like, no. I love the face, too. The, like, demon teeth face on her. I love that Megan Fox did this. It's just so wonderful, right? It's just so wonderful. The iconic shot of swimming in the lake. It's iconic. It's amazing. It's a poster. It's wonderful. I love it so much. It is creepy and like slightly scary, but also like, you know what she's doing. Obviously she's swimming off the evidence. And it's also like, she is a predator. She's cutting through the water.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it shows that there's no, like, in that moment, she has, like you said, she's the predator. There is nothing in that lake for her to fear.
Yeah. She is the apex predator. It's amazing. Oh, my God. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good. Background stuff. Local Low Shoulder has their ritual paid off. They're becoming more famous. Like every time Low Shoulder is mentioned, they're more and more famous. So the ritual did work is kind of what we glean from that. We also have a little background of Needy's mom being like, hey, you're going to call for me. I'm not going to be here.
Oh, yeah. That was so apparent when she was like, mommy. Home Andrew's not there. Yeah. And like, oh, well, there you go. Yeah. That was a quick, you know, ROI on that.
So good. So good.
But okay, I have a question. So we know, I'm jumping ahead. So Low Shoulder is getting more famous. Yes, the ritual, I'll say, worked to an extent for them because, but at the same time, did it really? And I say that because with all the occult digging that that Needy does, it goes wrong because Jennifer was never a virgin. Because the whole ritual had to go around being a virgin. So, like, they could only reach, I guess, so much quote-unquote success because it wasn't really completed.
Well, I don't think so. I think that they get off scot-free on this. I think they have no problem. It is the victim that has to deal with their repercussions.
Yeah.
Based on what she says, like, the ritual can still be achieved or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So I feel like the ritual works, but the fallout is deemed an unsuccessful ritual because of the fallout, which is you have a demon fucking running around after your ritual because you didn't have a virgin, which we'll get to all of that.
I see. So the demon is still running around because it wasn't a virgin, because if she was a virgin, this demon would be like under control. Nothing would be happening. But because that isn't the case, that's why she is possessed.
If she was a virgin, she would be dead. And there would be no demon.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Like, it's good. The research, there's a line. We'll say it. Okay, where are we? We are up to the phone call. I'm feeling scrumptious.
I am a god. I was like, go off, Aelin!
I am a god. Yeah. Jesus didn't invent the calendar. Like, it's all just so good. It's all so good. I remarked when I was watching this to Editor Sam that there is almost nothing more satisfying on this planet Earth, and I'm dating myself, I know, than closing a fucking flip phone. Oh my God. Because Jennifer is just like,
there's a satisfaction. It's like when people used to like a physical phone, like slam down the physical phone.
It's so good. And both of them just like do it. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing. But that phone call where Jennifer is saying, like, I feel so scrumptious, I want to hang out, whatever, boo, 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 boo. On the other line is Chip calling Needy, and Chip is saying, like, hey, come meet me at the park. Some shit is going down. That shit being they found Jonas's body. Jonas's body looks like lasagna with teeth.
But I think that's finally when he was like, maybe some of the things that you're saying, I don't know what's going on, and I know you're saying some stuff, but maybe there's a realm of possibility of what you're also talking about.
Yeah, it's like, we'll see. We are up to the iconic, I'm saying that a lot just because this movie is iconic.
The whole thing is iconic, right?
The whole thing is like iconic, yeah. But the hallway, the heart outfit.
I love it so much.
Come on. She looks stunning. She looks amazing. She looks otherworldly. Of course, all of that is the point. You know, she's in pink. Everybody else is in blues and grays. Like, all of that is the point. But you can buy that. Like, they have that sweater. You can get it. It's a thing. I love a hallway walk. The saturation of the colors, the music, the hair, all of it's very Jawbreaker. I love it so much. Fantastic. This is where Needy is like, you know, we had faith. Things can get better. Things are going to get better. We were fucking idiots. We have a nice timeline. The beginning, the cold open tells us it's 2 months. This scene where we're at is 1 month later. This is when we are up to the explanation, I think, myself personally, for kind of the way the language is in the film. So Jennifer is bad. She's a month after her kill.
And she's not understanding just yet about, like, the kill energy factor. She just, and she looks bad. And we say that, Needy says, well, bad for Jennifer. Like, even when she looks bad, she looks great, you know?
Yeah, bad for Jennifer. Yeah, like, you look really tired, yeah. Low Shoulder's going to give 3% of their profits to local families from their sold-out tour, right? They're getting more famous. Yeah, yeah. And Needy's like, well, what about the other 97%? Fuck them. And the other girl, Chastity, who's our only Asian character with dialogue, starts defending Low Shoulder. So we have like a woman defending, you know. But then we have Needy being like, well, that's just crass. Just crass. So now I challenge you to Google the definition of crass. Crass, you can say, is exactly how Jennifer speaks and acts. She's a very crass person. She will say like, oh, I just tell it how it is, right? That's what she said. I just tell it how it is. But she's very crass. So that, I mean, it's built in right there. And it gives us like a definition. The definition that Needy uses is something else. But the definition of crass is just like rude and mean.
And in the same scene, I hope you know that this is a struggle that I had when I first started watching sci-fi. Laura, you know this. When I go, well, technically, you have to get your technicalities out of your head because nothing's supposed to make sense. But this movie is another technically that I had because you have her friend defending Low Shoulder. I say friend. I guess it's high school. Everybody's friends. But in the real, you just know each other. And she's like, it is true. I looked it up on Wikipedia. So I'm like, okay. So now we have like an even like a technological timeline. We have a MySpace reference and we have a Wikipedia reference. So you know for a fact that Google does exist. So tell me why this girl is looking for occult shit in a library off of 5 books. And I'm like, you could have just Googled that shit.
That's not a satisfying montage.
It's just, this is my technicality.
It's just computer screens.
Oh, yeah, because you have to do,
like... No, we need
the
library. We need the books.
We need the slow... looking over the words with her lips reading the... I get the layering and the visuals, but I'm just saying, this girl's talking about Wikipedia, so she goes to the library? I'm pretty sure that those books are from the 1800s.
I would have dated Colin in high school. Oh,
I
my God.
Knew
Colin,
you. That wasn't even a question. I saw, that was like that boy. And he
all
was...
over. All over it.
I was like, oh, Laura, where is she at? And then, but look now this is the first time that her boyfriend, Chip, is jealous. How do you know that guy? And she's like, oh, we have class together. He only talks to such and such people. Well, he talks to me and he's actually like really creative. And then Chip's like, I could be like that too.
Yeah, I could be like that too. But Colin's going to ask out Jennifer, but before that, we have Jennifer saying, like, PMS isn't real. It was invented by the boy, what is it? Like, the boy-owned media to make us seem crazy.
That's exactly the line. It was invented by the boy-run media to make us seem crazy.
To make us seem crazy. It's just amazing. It's just amazing. It's so good. And then she says, like, it's wearing off. So this is Jennifer, like, starting to figure out, like, what is really going on. But, like, I don't like boxing movies. Oh, my God. Colin asking out Jennifer. Oh, it's so sweet, but it's so awkward.
I love that that's what he was like, you know what? I really just created this girl in my head because the fact that she doesn't know who, like, what. Well, and it's also like a testament to like their relationship too. I say they, Needy and Jennifer, because Needy had no idea who Tarzan or who Phil Collins was. And here Jennifer is like having no idea what like the Rocky Horror Picture Show is. So it was just both of like, it just also circles back to the beginning of the movie where Chip is like, you guys have nothing in common. And she goes, we have things in common. You know, just because I like agree with her, you know, doesn't mean I don't have my own mind.
And it's here because, Colin like is embarrassed and he's like, fuck it, whatever. And then Needy's like, I really like Colin. I like Colin. And, Jennifer's like, he listens to Maggot Rock and he wears eyeliner. My dick is bigger than his. And Needy's like, I like him. And then Jennifer looks at her like, you like him?
This, yeah, it was the, and this is the toxic, but this is another, there are, they're toxic friendships. Let's call it what they are, where there are people who find out you like a person. I had a friend like this in high school. She knew I liked the second she knew I was stupid. I didn't put two and two together. She would like the same person and get them after I would say I showed interest in a person.
Boo.
Yeah, boo. But like,
ew, they know better. That's shitty.
But that's like, that's essentially what Jennifer is doing here, because then even moments when she knows her quote unquote best friend is dating Chip, it's not like she likes him. She's in a relationship with Chip. She's like, Chip's looking really good lately. And Needy gets, she gets a little bit more PDA than usual and will like grab Chip and like show, I say in quotes, ownership and possessiveness, but she's like, bitch, he's my boyfriend. Why is this even a conversation?
It's all very interesting, especially the look. It's the look that it's, cause it's supposed to be like the demon, right? We're supposed to think it's like the demon inside of her, cause it's a very predatory look. It's like, oh, you like him. You like him. All right. So,
No, because there is a part, again, towards the end, because I guess like they're on a, like Needy and Chip are on a break, where Jennifer, this goes to her insecurity, says, she's like, am I better than Needy?
Like, am I better than
tell
Needy?
Me. Yeah. Yeah. He was just like, you're fucking crazy.
Oh, we'll get to that, because I have a problem with that too. Okay. So, what does Jennifer say? Jennifer says, Colin, I changed my mind. I just got Aquamarine on DVD. I think she has sex through her blowhole. Stop it. I lost my shit. Like I snorted. Like, I had things coming out of my nose. It was so fucking funny.
I don't know. She's half sushi or whatever.
Like, stop. That's gold. It's just put it on a t-shirt. I'll wear it right now. We are up now to the parallel. I'm going to call them parallel sex scenes, right? We have Needy and Chip and their sex scenes. And then we have Colin and Jennifer and their like meetup and how that goes. And the way that they're cut is like Needy's is like very sweet and like kind of boring and like very vanilla and like whatever. Very, very wholesome.
It's high school. This is both clearly their first time. They're both kind of like, I got condoms. And she's like, well, that's presumptuous of you. And he's like, that's not what I mean. Like, but like, if you want to, like, my mom's not going to be home. So like, let's chill.
It's sweet. It's
so sweet.
They're children. It's fine. So they are there in his house having sex, Needy and Chip. Meanwhile, Colin is driving up to an empty house to meet Jennifer, and he's freaked out. He's freaked out the whole time. I feel so bad for Colin. I just love Colin. He finally gets up to where Jennifer is. He's like, this isn't your house. She's like, yes, it is. It's our house. You know, you and me, we can play mommy and daddy. And she like takes off her top, and he's like, do you even know my last name? Like, I love Colin. Colin's like, what? And to a point, he's a boy. And then Colin gets a little bit into it, but then he's like not into it, and he like slams his hand like on a nail or whatever, and she's like, oh my god, you have a puncture wound, that's so emo. And then she like breaks his hands, and she's like, I need you frightened, I need you hopeless. And then she eats him behind the curtain. Now, as that is happening, through the blood bond that Needy and Jennifer have, because they shared blood when they were children and they have a little sense for each other, Needy is now experiencing visions and feelings from Jennifer while Jennifer is eating Colin, while Needy is having sex, while Chip is thinking that he is fucking killing it.
He thinks he's killing it. He's like, am I too big? Like, he is in his glory, this boy. He's like, this is how it's done.
Am I too big? Like, I can't imagine ever being an actor. How?
There's a reason they get paid. There's a reason that they're the actors and not us.
It was amazing. It's amazing. All of this to say that Needy jumps out of bed and leaves Too Big Chip to drive somewhere. I don't think she knows where she's going. And she's driving and she runs into Jennifer in the middle of the road, and Jennifer jumps on and breaks her mom's car, her Kia.
Jennifer in demon form.
Yes, in demon form. Although I would say they are one in the same, I think. at this point.
They're one and the same, but I feel like one, she's more coherent, like in her school form.
Yeah.
But after her succubus, you know, I guess her feeding frenzy form, she's not, you know, she is in succubus mode.
Yeah, exactly. We're up to it. We're up to it. We are up to it. We are up to what is considered one of the best kisses, same-sex kisses on film. Jess, were you expecting this?
I wasn't expecting it. I was just like, oh, okay, we're going there. There was a lot of zoom-ins. Like, I'm not complaining. I just wasn't expecting it.
Yeah, there's a lot of zoom-ins. I have to say, honestly, tasteful. If I'm saying anything about it.
I might like it more than the Cruel Intention one.
Yeah, there's well, one, there's more going on. It's a little bit more fun. but also, like, it is, I mean, the director is a woman, the writer is a woman. You have two actresses, like, they were both into it. They've given interviews saying they were both into it. They have similar kissing styles.
And I think also that it shows, like, from an artistic standpoint for the film, it shows the confusion that the characters are having with each other. Not so much Jennifer, but where Needy is in her state, because she just came from losing her virginity to her boyfriend. And here she is with her best friend, who she's had a crush on her entire life. And then we also get the context that they have done this in the past before. So even in those moments, she's kind of swept up away into it. And then she does the thing. She was like, you know, you get a little bit coherent. She's like, wait, what the fuck is happening? What the fuck is going on? I am so confused. And who are you? And what is going on? And you just broke my mom's car. Like everything is just at, emotions are just like at a level 10 all around, and there's confusion, and it's just, there's a lot going on. There's confusion, there's questions, there's hormones, and she wants answers to it all.
I would also say that Needy is going from passionless sex with Chip, right? She was not into that. She was not into it. She was just like staring at the wall.
Mm-hmm.
She goes from passionless sex with Chip to she is into it with Jennifer. Like, you, like, she's the one that tops Jennifer. Like, make no bones about it. She's into it. So it is, again, the anger, the frustration, the confusion, like the toxic kind of relationship, because like there's gaslighting here. There's more gaslighting here. Jesus, Needy, stop screaming. Like, come on. Like, what are you doing? And then the Evil Dead t-shirt, very fun throwaway here. Again, though, they are friends, and Jennifer says, no, I want to tell you what happened. There's no secrets between best friends. This is what happened to me. Again, was not expecting a full confession set like this with just a, I want to tell you what is going on situation. I figured it would be more of like a, she's going to walk in on her feet killing some, you know, like it's going to be like a weird confrontational situation, and that was taken away. And this is a soft setting. It's a slumber party setting. They're like undressed. Jennifer's in her underwear, very vulnerable, talking about this. And she confesses what fucking happened. And just like, what fucking happened to Jennifer?
Well, Jennifer was kidnapped in Low Shoulders van, and this is where she was like, yes, I'm a virgin, like hoping like this is what's going to say, like, oh, because she thinks she's going to be raped at this point. And she's thinking, you know, her being a virgin, she's like, you're not going to have fun with me. I don't know anything, like all this, that, the other thing. And it turns out that that's exactly kind of what they want, is somebody, because they want to sacrifice her and for this ritual to become famous. And they do it at the place that we know at the beginning of the movie. That's kind of like this whirlpool that nobody knows where the items end up. So they have a place to talk. That's specifically why they came here, so they can get rid of the murder weapon without being tracked. And she's trying to like, she is trying to talk to them, trying to like humanize herself in them. And Seth Cohen goes hard on that murder. He tries to distract her so she's not screaming so much. And they just, him and the band start screaming the 80s song 8675309. And he starts singing it and starts stabbing her.
Yep. Seth Cohen, what else does he do?
Oh, and they leave her. They think she's dead and they leave her. And then she says in this scene, I don't know what happened after that. I just woke up and I was wandering the road. Because that was also a question. I was like, right. Why? The first thing I would have done is if they were, I would have attacked them. They are now my victims.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What else also happens? Seth Cohen goes, you don't have to talk if you don't want to. And she goes, and then Jennifer is like, you know, I am a virgin. Are you rapists? And what does Seth Cohen do? He goes, I hate girls. And we have the funny conversation, like, you want to be Maroon 5 rich? You want to be Maroon 5 rich? Fuck yeah, you do. We have the line, we are here to sacrifice the body of Jennifer. Bam, right there. We love it. I like the throwaway line about the Bowie knife. Like, it's like, obviously he has absolutely no idea what a Bowie knife is. Very fun. Again, a heart is an indie band. We're so cute. Satan's our only hope. People are going to gut you and bleed you. The 8675309 musical number, they stab her 17 times. I read in one of the articles that we will link in the show notes that is so scary because one, it's played totally serious again, which is terrifying. And two, the boys are bonding over this. Like, they are bonding over murdering this woman. So like, this is like a bonding blood ritual between these boys over the killing of Jennifer's body specifically. Like, not any, like, because they need a pure body. They don't actually like care about her. So they're sacrificing her because they, you know, all of this. She's alive because she is not a virgin. So not being a virgin saved her life. And this is where like all of the twists, this is where the feminism happens. This is where all of this comes into play. You're exactly right when she says, Jennifer says, like, I woke up. I'm such a good friend. I went right to you and I was so hungry, but I couldn't hurt you. I'm such a good friend.
Yeah, she made it seem like her friendship and relationship with Needy is the reason. She's like, I didn't know anything, but it was like I was called to you. I was beckoned to you. This is like a you are my home kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then the scene, and then Jennifer continues to tell us more. And then Needy's like, so they killed you. Jennifer's like, no, I'm still here for some reason. Like, I shouldn't be, though. And then we find out again through more flashbacks that Jennifer finds and ate Ahmet because nobody knew that he was there. And we get the demonstration that she's basically killable when she's full. We get more gaslighting too, because Needy is just like, well, fuck this. I'm going to turn you in. I'm going to call the cops. And she's like, I'm fucking a cadet. Like, there's nothing you can do. And like, you know, you should really see somebody about all of these disturbing thoughts that you're having. We're all really concerned, especially Chip. Chip is also really concerned. And that is where Needy's like, leave. And we have Jennifer just like, all right, peace out through the fucking window, which find so funny.
And also, like, when she goes to, like, before she just dips, she goes to go through the act of leaving. And even Needy's like, what are you doing? And Jennifer goes, you told me to leave. So I'm leaving. Like, what did you think was going to happen?
Yeah, like, come on. Very fun stuff. You know, we're in the backslide of the movie now. The paranormal research, you know, montage that you mentioned earlier is now. We find out it's demons, probably a succubus. She doesn't actually say. She just says demons, but whatever. How to kill them, all of that stuff. The background here is formal is happening. Cheesecake Factory line, very fun.
Also, like,
high school money. Like, he's just like, she's like, I just for our safety, I don't think we should go. And he's like, I spent a lot of money, $12 on a corsage. Like, yeah, it's really important to me.
And then also before, so they do break up. So they're like on a break, I guess. And, but this is after Needy tells Chip her theory about like demon, like Jennifer's a demon. All of this has happened. She's eating boys to sustain herself. She's, and I like how she goes, she's evil. And Chip's like, yeah, I know. And she's like, no, like actually evil, not like high school evil. She says it so quickly. So like, just like not high school evil, like obviously. And he's like, what does Chip say? Chip says, it's not that I don't believe you. It's that I don't believe this. I don't believe this, but I believe that you believe this. And that's a scary thing to say to somebody. But then we have the classic, like, it's not safe to be together right now. Very fun. But this is up to the transference, Jess. This is what you were saying. The transference, the sacrifice was impure. So a demon then resides in the soul of the victim and must eat people to sustain that demon. Very fun. Very fun stuff. The dance setup montage is through the trees. It's still a banger. I'm singing it in my head.
So, I know. I'm like, like I'm. It would go on the OC soundtrack. Like it would.
It really
it's
would.
Like, and volume two is so much better than volume one. Like I still will pull up like a Spotify or an Apple Music, and whenever I head out to LA, I always have the OC soundtrack playing.
It's too good. We have Chip's mom giving the pepper spray. There's somebody out here for little boys. It's very sweet. Then we have, again, I'm going to say it again, iconic. It's probably the fifth time I've said it. Makeup application, Jennifer crying in the mirror, putting on her makeup. It's a meme. It's everything.
Just caking it on. But you can tell because at this point, she hasn't fed. You know that she's sick. So she's definitely using that makeup to cover up how sickly she is and how much she does need the blood. There's also the mirror, like the selfie picture of herself while she's getting ready. I love that. And even like the whole, like even Chip saying like, he wasn't just upset that it was pepper spray his mom was giving him. It was specifically ladies pepper spray. And he's like, but mom, I've been working out. Like, no, nobody is safe. And it just goes, and this just reminds me of like the conversation that happens where there was that Always commercial where it was like, what's run like a girl? And everybody was just like flailing. And it was just a mockery of just women in general of having that. And that I feel like that aligned with the whole ladies pepper spray and not just this is a general protective, you know, this is a general pepper spray. It's just like, what is it? The pink tax? That's what it felt like. And the conversation that goes along with that.
Yeah, he needs it in black and his dad needs to give it to him for him to like use it. It's very important. Marketing. It's very important. Marketing. Very fun. We are up to the spring formal. Why is Chip fucking walking? What? Okay. Why is Jennifer walking? I understand she's stalking. She's a predator. She's praying. I get it. She's doing her thing. But why is Chip fucking walking?
I can't understand the landscape of this town because it was like they were cutting through like a golf course to school.
Yeah, it's very strange. It's very strange. Anyway, the point to all of this being Chip runs into Jennifer. Jennifer starts talking shit, saying that Needy was fucking Colin and that they were what? Total varsity moves, doing shit that you've never heard of. She's like, okay.
Meanwhile, Chip, like, is like, I swear it has nothing to do with, like, the 4 minutes of lovemaking I gave you.
Yeah.
Like, 2 seconds before.
Yeah, the lovemaking. But then, so quickly after Jennifer is just like, yeah, she was fucking Colin. That's why she's so upset about it. That's why she's acting so weird. He starts making out with Jennifer, like, so fast.
Such a problem with that.
Just
such a problem.
Yeah, just immediately. Just knowing he doesn't like her, knowing that he was jealous, like, of their friendship, and, like, knowing that Needy had, like, theories about her and, like, is not okay. And then, like, knowing that the reason that they're not together right now is because of Needy being upset with Jennifer and having these theories about it. So it just goes along with, like, I think there's something else there, working there. Some sort of siren call, just as you put it earlier.
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, because did you read? I don't mean read. Did you have the subtitles on when you were watching the movie?
Yes.
Okay. So in that scene where he's like walking across the golf course, there's a subtitle that says like Chip, but you don't hear it. Here's the thing. You as a viewer don't hear it. You just see the subtitle. And yes. Then she shows up in front of you. Jennifer shows up in front of Chip and she goes, "Hey, did you hear me calling?"
Didn't you hear me calling you? Yeah.
And he goes, "No, I didn't." She just shows up.
We did
because of the subtitles. Plus, we also had a visual of her like yards and yards and yards, like 50 yards away. And then all of a sudden she shows up in front of him. But he would not have heard her, but we heard her through the subtitle. So this adds to your like something that is in play there with her.
Absolutely, because it just has to be because you would have to be putting me under a spell to drag me to this abandoned fucking pool. Oh my god. Oh my god. And you'd have to use a better line on me than "I feel so empty. Why don't you kiss me again? I'm sorry. I'm sorry."
All of it. Because even when they were like making out under the tree, she's just like, I don't know. I guess this goes to the something in play. Because initially on my first watch, I was like, if it were me, I'd be like, my boyfriend was always into my best friend. And we have friends whose husbands were into other friends. And we know how those marriages ended up. So it's really interesting. I was really gunning for it. And then the second time I was like, okay, there is. And now that we're talking about it more, I go, he definitely wouldn't have, because when he snapped out of that spell, he pushed her away.
Yeah, he rejected her. And when he rejects her is when she like bites him. And then they start fighting in the pool.
And it's also when she was asking, "Tell me I'm better than needy." It was like a little switch went off for him then too. He's like, "Wait, what?" Like that was also like maybe he was a little bit stronger to pull himself out of that trance.
Yeah, it's all interesting. It's all subtext, I guess. We have to like infer this. I don't have to infer that the CGI of Needy running to that pool is so fucking bad. What is that? What is that?
That was a really bad green screen. Come on. It was 2009. Didn't we have like Twilight out by now? Like it should have been a better green screen.
It should have been better than that. Holy fucking shit. Okay, but now we're up to the fight. This is like the absolute backslide of this movie. We're up to the fight in the pool. I love this fight in the pool because it's like so serious, but like not serious at the same time. Like it is so serious and not serious. It's just like, is she flying? She's hovering. It's not that impressive. Like, oh my God, stop.
And then she was like, stop. What was it? Like, stop eating my boyfriend? I don't even remember. And she stops and she keeps going. And then the Jennifer under the water and the like the curvature of the water as she's approaching, it's all very, very campy.
She's like, hovering. She's hovering. It's not that impressive. She's like, why do you have to undermine everything that I do? It's like, you're a jerk. He's like, ooh, good comeback. It's like, you're a bad friend. She's like, you're a bad friend. And now I'm eating your boyfriend. At least I'm consistent. So this is like the blow up of all of the toxic friendship, of all of the like confused feelings. Everything is here. Because again, we have our insecure speech about the snowflake queen.
Oh, that you're so insecure. And then and Jennifer's like, how can I be insecure? I'm the snowflake queen. And Needy goes, yeah. 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah. And then she like, and then that goes into like the ED and she's like, and and 2 years ago, you didn't need to take laxatives to say your size. And now here you are now doing that. And you can just like, she's basically saying like, you're more insecure than, you know, just because nobody else thinks it doesn't mean I don't see you for who you are.
And then you have the comeback. I'm going to eat your soul and shit it out. Because, but I thought you only ate boys. And then we have the iconic.
I go both ways.
Iconic. Mm-hmm. There you go. There you go. I was not expecting Chip to come through and stab her here. Was not.
No.
I thought he was done.
And we also know, again, she was weak at the beginning of this from the makeup application. And then she's not as weak because she has already taken some of Chip's blood. And then you have the conversation, again, another PMS period related conversation, you know, comment of, do you have a tampon? Because she has this hole in her. She goes, because you're acting plugged up.
Well, that is a direct reference to Death Becomes Her. So
I haven't seen that. I know. I'm a terrible person.
The pool also is a direct reference. So that whole scene is a direct reference to Death Becomes Her, who also is a woman who has a hole in the middle of her stomach.
Yeah. I'm familiar with the movie poster.
Yes. So the pool, the tampon, all of that is a reference to that. So we love, we stan, we stan. But without context, it is fucking weird and a little jarring and goes and without context would tie back to the crass comment earlier.
Right.
So Chip dies. I love you. I love you. I should have believed you. He's done. Okay. Done. Circling back. We love a nice circle back to the cold open. Jess, you said, and here we are.
So here we have Needy. I don't want to say stalking, but at this point we know that Jennifer escaped the plunged pole because she climbed out the window. We also know her healing properties because she has
shown. Again, another window.
Yeah, another window. I mean, these people are like nimble. They are nimble, or at least Jennifer is specifically. Needy finally just like leaps through a window and attacks Jennifer laying in her bed. And they have another follow up to a big fallout where she's like, you killed my fucking boyfriend, you crazy bitch. Like, you're so like, now she's pissed. Now her boyfriend's dead. Nobody knows who's done it, because in my head, the sequence of things, it's all pretty back to back, you know? In my head, he's still kind of in the pool house with his body, and she's like Needy is seeking vengeance. And then she, you know, they have their, I mean, things are happening. They're levitating, they're rolling around. It's very, again, it still seems very confused because, yes, they are enemies. Yes, there is a toxic friendship, but that happens a lot also. And obviously, like, there is a, like, a romantic history there as well. But just sometimes for any type of emotion, it doesn't just go out the window. Things, you know, there's still a history there.
There is a history there. And the necklace rips off. Like, when the necklace rips off.
This is what it was. The question I wanted to circle back to, the necklace, and the necklace that specifically says BFF, it has blood dripping on it. And then once Needy rips the necklace off of Jennifer and this fight is happening midair, they stop meditating. So I feel like there is some sort of correlation of the power that their friendship had at some point. And this was significant of like breaking the bond of their friendship, no longer have like the control and power over each other.
Yes, you said it.
These are my thoughts. But I wasn't sure.
That is exactly it. Exactly it. Exactly. You could do a supernatural route and say like that was the last thing that was like binding them together. And now that, you know, now that it's gone, she's free to kill her. You know, you could do that too. The line, do you buy all your murder weapons at Home Depot? You're so butch. So funny. So good. So good. My tit. No, my heart. Your heart. Also very good. And then the mom finds her dead daughter's body and Needy just like chilling there, whatever, having like a little zen moment. Do you know what this is? This is a box cutter. It's just okay. Okay.
I mean,
it's funny. Like, it's all good. Like, it's all good. So now though, we're back with Needy. She is still in the, asylum, and she talks now about she has survived a demon bite, and like paranormal scholars like don't know that, but if you survive a demon bite, you absorb some of the abilities. So she breaks out, she has hovering, she has strength. She randomly finds the Bowie knife, love that for her. Hitches a ride, she's following a band, and credits. She murders Low Shoulder. That's that.
I mean, I love everything about it because even some of my notes, I'm like, if this were me, I understand the revenge part of it. I do. Like, you know, I as a female was taken advantage by men. Now, like, fuck all men. Like, I get that part of the conversation and, you know, that closure part. I also think if their friendship wasn't that toxic, I feel like there would have been a conversation of, I see you, I hear you, but how about we like turn this into some vigilante shit? Like, let's go after, like, let's pull a Dexter. And if the government isn't going to give us justice, let's take justice into our own hands. But that isn't part of the conversation, obviously, because of just like the direction, because of the story. But I do like that Needy still seeks Low Shoulder because they started it. They were the people who started it from the beginning. And it's just very satisfying that they thought that they could just like leave her friend, one, because they thought they killed her, and two, they keep, and she knows, she's like, even in the beginning of the movie, she's like, I fucking hate this song, because it's just, you know, what does J.K. Simmons says? He's like, the official town anthem, this is our, and you know, they're having, like, candlelight vigils where people are singing the song together. And it is an interesting depiction of grief in a way, based on just like some of the conversations we've had from previous books, because by the time that, Colin dies, everybody's just like, oh, this is a part of life and keep moving on. And don't even take time to grieve. And here Needy is, who had an actual friendship with this person, and everybody's just so dismissive of it. And how, you know, the conversations like with Legendborn, you have a before Bree and after Bree. I love all the conversations that you can pull out from this movie.
Infinite, I think, conversations, and conversations that people are still having and were not having in 2009, but we can have now. I have some fun facts for you before we wrap up. Would you like to hear them?
Always.
I'm going to blow through these super fast. Okay, ready?
Okay.
This was written before Juno in 2006. This movie is campier than was originally intended. This is named after the song by Hole, and Courtney Love doesn't like that, even though Violet plays over the revenge scene and that song fucking slaps. The director made the entire cast watch The Evil Dead 2 and say these are the vibes that we're going for, which makes it funny when the t-shirt shows up in the movie. Emma Stone, Amanda Bynes, Lizzie Kaplan, and Brie Larson were all considered for Needy. It is rumored that that Megan Fox was always considered for this movie. However, there is another rumor that she only got it because Blake Lively turned it down. The sacrifice scene, Megan Fox says it represents her and the studios of Hollywood using her body for that. Two versions, we have already said, the studio and the director's version. The director's version, the director's cut, the studio didn't like because the boys were fleshed out a little bit more as people, and the studio thought it was too sad. The studio also thought it would be a good idea for Megan Fox to advertise this on amateur porn sites, but it was never broached with her. This was a musical in 2008, possibly a TV show. Ooh, I got some more. Megan Fox lost 15 pounds to play this, and she stayed out of the sun for 4 months. The park with the falls is Judge Magni State Park in Minnesota, and the falls go into a glacial pothole. That's a real place. We've talked about that the naked swimming scene, Megan was wearing a flesh covered bikini. Jennifer Check, the name Check was just kept because, Diablo said Jennifer Check, Needy Check, and they just kept it. The Bijou Theater mentioned in Rocky Horror is from the University of Iowa. One of the filmmakers is from there. Low Shoulder is actually a band called No Country. Very fun stuff. This movie depicts men as fragile and grief-stricken, which turns the trope on its head. The outside shot of Devil's Kettle is Cascade Falls in Mission, British Columbia, Canada. I'm almost done. In 2003, Chris Pratt and Seth Cohen, Adam Brody, were both on The O.C. We've already talked about that. Hell is other people. That is the quote that is a play on Hell is a Teenage Girl. Hell is Other People is from the 1944 No Exit play by Jean-Paul Sartre. This movie was called Twilight for Boys. And this movie is a very good example of The Monstrous Feminine by Barbara Creed, who has, a believe, a book by the same name. Please Google The Monstrous Feminine. It is amazing. And the theory is fantastic and very applicable to here. Those are all my fun facts. There were so fucking many.
Those are so many. I was so focused on like interviews and pulling quotes from the actors. And I know even as recently as this year, 2023, Adam Brody had come out and say a lot of things during some press tour in February 2023 that he's still talking about it and how upset he was that this movie was shit on so much. And he was like, look, I'm just one of the guys. I was like, hurt, like upset, like it's a shitty feeling. And I knew a lot of the comments weren't directed towards me. But if you know his relation to Hollywood and his wife and like how everything kind of interconnects, there's a lot of, you know, friendship circles going on. Like even just being the person who he is to be like, this is like, this industry is so messed up. And there is an excerpt that I kind of want to share. It's from Movie Web and we'll put the, I just kind of want to blow through it real quick. It really summarizes everything we discussed in this episode. They said they're there, as in Needy and Jennifer, their love, whether fully platonic or repressed in a romantic inclination, was doomed for failure in a world where women are pitted against each other so fiercely that it often becomes second nature. Every issue that Needy and Jennifer struggle with is a direct result of how men have treated them. Jennifer is only a demon because a group of desperate, mediocre musicians brutally murdered her. Jennifer's constant competition with Needy, evidenced in her efforts to always upstage Needy in terms of dress and physical presentation, is a byproduct of an internalized male gaze and fervent competition to win the favor of the male sex. Needy is still not immune to the damage of the male gaze. Either. While seemingly innocuous, her boyfriend's disapproval of her relationship to Jennifer highlights the phenomenon of men casting disdain upon women like Jennifer, while also those are the type of women who fulfill their fantasies of how women should be. Their science statement.
Boom. Done. Mic drop. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, yes, that's exactly the conversation that comes with this movie, or that should be coming from this movie. Again, a lot of these articles that we have found in our research are coming 10 plus years after that this has been released.
And we have all of those articles. They will all be listed in show notes. I really don't have much more to add except to say that this movie exists like within the female gaze, and it makes men uncomfortable, which was a note from screenings. And men didn't know how to react to this because this was marketed towards men, even though the director and the screenwriter and everybody involved said the target audience was teenage girls. So it is very, very interesting there, especially because all of the posters, all of that stuff was Megan Fox doing like sexy things. And that was what she was known for at the time. But men not knowing what to do with the movie that was marketed for them but not made for them helped contribute to this being a flop, as did the conversations happening around Megan Fox at 2009 during the time, and the way that she was kind of painted in Hollywood after her comments about Michael Bay, kind of very similar to our villains episode with Taylor Swift, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Good call back to that episode. I can talk about both. I could talk about both more extensively, too, but we won't go there because I am not like full-fledged Swiftie, but like, if you are, with all the Easter eggs, like, I bow and learn from y'all because I have a huge respect for everything involving with, both women, because they have both gone through it in this industry, in every at every spectrum. So thanks for joining us this week. And thanks for listening. Feel free to follow us on Instagram. We're at ACFAE Podcast. We're also both on TikTok, ACFAE Laura and ACFAE Jessica. We look forward to talking to y'all soon. Thanks again. Bye.
Bye.